On March 9th and 10th, Cleveland Right to Life hosted the third annual Bringing America Back to Life Symposium. Through prayer, action, the vote, and education, we labor to uphold the sanctity of human life and lead our nation back to a culture of life. We hope you will be inspired and motivated as you listen to our guest speakers define and defend the complex issues that make up the pro-life movement.
Valerie Huber is the Executive Director of the National Abstinence Education Association, NAEA, a Washington, D.C.-based professional association that supports abstinence education as the optimal strategy for teen sexual health. Huber is a frequent spokesperson for teen sexual health and has been interviewed hundreds of times by prominent print, radio, and television outlets. She is an expert on the history of sex education as well as on the public policy that has influenced how sex education is taught in communities across the nation. Recently, she has been speaking out against the federal decision to cut all funding for abstinence education in schools. Huber fights to reveal the irrationality of the Obama administration's decision by proving with scientific evidence the positive effects abstinence education has on the economy and social structures of our country. Please sit back and enjoy Valerie Huber's presentation, free of sponsor breaks or advertisements.
On March 9th and 10th, Cleveland Right to Life hosted the third annual Bringing America Back to Life Symposium. Through prayer, action, the vote, and education, we labor to uphold the sanctity of human life and lead our nation back to a culture of life. We hope you will be inspired and motivated as you listen to our guest speakers define and defend the complex issues that make up the pro-life movement.
Well, I have a lot to live up to now. It's such a delight to have a full room of people who, I'll bet you 100% of you believe that abstinence education is a good approach. Is that true? You know why that's so encouraging? Because in Washington, D.C., in a group like this, of this number of people, maybe the person I came with agrees with me. And that's about it. Well, so why do we talk about abstinence education among a group who already is supportive? You know, I was really honored to be able to come here because I really believe that we need to expand our view of what it means to be pro-life. And if we really want to, as some have cited as their goal, to end abortion in our lifetime, the best way to do that is for abstinence until marriage and faithfulness within it. And so this is really primary prevention at its best. How many of you are here because you are trying to earn CEU credits from this, just so I get an idea? Okay, not too many. Well, because we are offering CEU credits for this, I can't stray from the path very much. There are certain things that I have to cover so that they can earn their credits. That doesn't mean, however, that if you have questions, we can't have an exchange, and I'm going to be available through this evening. Would love to talk to you. So this is not going to be maybe what you thought this session was going to be about. It's not going to be about how to talk to your children or your grandchildren about abstinence education. It's not how do I remain abstinent when I'm in high school or in college. This is what I would say is building ammunition to advocate in your communities, in your home, in your school, in your state, and in your nation. Advocate not in terms of lobbying, necessarily, but sometimes we already believe something in our heart because our moral standards and guidance tells us it's true. But then when we communicate it in the public square, maybe we're talking to someone who doesn't necessarily share all the values and beliefs we do. Abstinence education is one of those topics that we can and should be able to communicate in a way that it makes sense to any person who is reasonable. And hopefully, after leaving today's session, you will be equipped to be able to do that. There's so much misinformation about this topic, and I want to tell you just real briefly how I got involved with NAEA. About 5 years ago, leaders in abstinence education from across the country got together, and they realized that we were losing this battle. The battle in the public square about sexual morality and what's best. What's best for sex education policy? We were losing. Why was it? It's because all of the people who provided abstinence education were in the communities making difference in young people's lives. They were serving in their churches and in their schools. But they did not want to debate somebody that hated them in the media. And they didn't want to go to Washington, D.C. and meet with members of Congress who might already think that they know what this is about without knowing a thing about it. That's not why they got involved. They got involved because they cared about the next generation. They wanted to make a difference. So NAEA started as a result of that. And I got the privilege to be able to represent abstinence programs from across the country who serve between 1 and 2 million students to make it so that they can do what they do. And hopefully I'll make that path a little easier for them, and you will be able to do the same for this generation and the next, hopefully. Well, abstinence education, we believe, is really the optimal strategy for teens. What do I mean by that? There are really two different approaches to sex education. One is contraceptive-based sex education, and the other is abstinence education, which, if followed, the person doesn't need to worry about any of the possible consequences of premarital sexual activity. They don't have to worry about going to Planned Parenthood or a crisis pregnancy center because they don't have to worry about pregnancy. They don't have to worry about a sexually transmitted disease or any of the emotional consequences. But before we talk about that, I want to test you and see what you know about youth culture, because it's very important that we know that so we can communicate articulately with young people. Here's the first question. What are the two top websites visited by teens? We might need teens to tell us if we're right. Okay, what's the top one?
Facebook.
And what's the second one?
Facebook.
Oh, I heard Twitter. What else? Okay. I see some teens here. What do you think? Here it is. The answer is Facebook, number one. YouTube, number two. Okay, this one's a little harder. What is the top downloaded song this week? Anyone? Did somebody say Need to Breathe? Here it is. We Are Young by Fun. How many have heard of it? Okay, the young people in the group have heard of it. I listened to it last night. And here's part of the chorus. We are young, so let's set the world on fire. We can burn brighter than the sun. Now, the context wasn't exactly how I'm going to be using it, but we really need to encourage and take our hats off to young people who are making much better decisions than many of us did when we were their age. But they're facing an awful lot of things bombarding them. And let's look at what the world of the teen really is. They are the most media-connected generation ever. What do they consume? Music videos. And did you know that of all the media out there, music videos contain the most sexual content of any other medium per minute? The top source, yikes, The top source of sex information for young teens, the media. The average media presents 40 sexual messages per day. Are you getting a trend here? 75% of teens say the media makes sex an expected behavior. So what is the overriding message that our culture is sending to teens? It's normalizing sex. And what are the consequences? It's presenting a very distorted view of what healthy sex is. Think about it. When you see any kind of sexual relationship in the media, it's usually lacks commitment, lacks consequence, and almost never involves marriage. Often involves violence or something else that demeans particularly the female. Research has shown that this media communication of sex also contributes to the early initiation of sex among teens. And girls are at greatest risk, according to the APA. So that I wanted to share that just to kind of set a backdrop, because it's pretty sobering, isn't it? Really. This is not the same culture that many, that you, or certainly I know that I grew up in. When I was growing up, there were 2 STDs that we needed to be concerned about. Now there are 20 to 100, depending on how you count them. Well, what is abstinence? Do you think we could all come up with a pretty common definition? Pretty straightforward, right? I will warn you that everything that follows in this topic is pretty graphic, and so if you feel uncomfortable with that, you probably might want to leave. The reason that I'm giving you that warning is because I'm going to be sharing with you some things that are presented in schools across the country and are being paid for with your tax dollars right now for young people in the 4th grade and above. So what is abstinence? Okay, here's how some would define it. Did you know that even Planned Parenthood has an abstinence curriculum? Yes, they do, and it's called Making Sense of Abstinence. Let's hear how they define abstinence for the students. This is a quote. Participants will define sexual abstinence for themselves. Okay, here's the next thing. Ask participants what sexual behaviors a person could engage in and still be abstinent. Among the choices for students to choose, reading erotic literature, cuddling naked, mutual masturbation, showering together, and watching porn. This is the abstinence curricula for Planned Parenthood for teens 12 and above. Do you call that abstinence? Yet the unsuspecting parent can go into a school and ask, do you teach abstinence? And they can truthfully say, yes, we do. And the average parent will turn and leave thinking that all is well, when in fact it is not. Here's how we at the National Abstinence Education Association define abstinence. Hopefully it's more in line with your views. Abstinence means voluntarily refraining from all sexual activity, including but not limited to sexual intercourse. Why is it necessary to say all sexual activity? It's because so many are defining it like Planned Parenthood did in their curriculum. And we wonder why there's rampant sexually transmitted disease among teens when they think they're being abstinent. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little upset. Okay, here is another curricula, and I want to tell you that in each of these examples, I know you can't read them, but I just want to flash them up there just so you know I'm not making it up, okay? Everything on the left-hand side is All of these curricula are ones that your taxpayer dollars are funding right now. And in fact, $75 million of your taxpayer funds are requiring the introduction of these curricula into schools across the country. Okay, the one on the left, the one with your taxpayer dollars. They define abstinence by saying, quote, "This still allows for the expression of sexual feelings or release of sexual tension through behaviors that do not include intercourse." Your taxpayer dollars at work. Here's how our abstinence programs define it. Choosing to save all sexual activity for marriage, which includes any kind of genital contact or stimulation. Same age group, a much different message. Here's another one. The one on the left, a different curriculum, again with your taxpayer dollars, that $75 million. And you'll see that we put a little blue dot beside some things that they considered to be green light activities. Massage, showering together, doing drugs but not sharing needles. And there are others. Okay, on the right, the abstinence program is encouraging young people to make a pledge to remain abstinent until they marry and to then provide the skills so that they're successful in that pursuit. So abstinence education has an awful lot of misinformation about it. And for those of you who are seeking CEU credits, we need to go through these, and you might want to take notes because it may be on the final test that you'll get at the end. The reason the rest of you would benefit from knowing this, however, is because these are the very criticisms that you may hear of why abstinence education should be outlawed in this state and others. And it's being used successfully. It's not abstinence only. This is a very holistic message, and it includes a whole lot of different topics. Healthy relationship buildings. You know, if you talk about sex and take it away from a holistic view of a human person, you really miss out on the real value of it. Teens want to know what a healthy relationship looks like. They want to know how to escape from an unhealthy one. They want to know what it takes to be a good future partner. Maybe that wasn't modeled in their own home, and the only way they're going to learn it, some of them, is in an abstinence education class. They want to be able to set their goals for the future and know what it means to make a good decision. And these are life skills that are going to carry them through their adult lives. So it's not just refusal skills, although it does include that as well. We talk about avoiding the risks and the consequences of sexually transmitted disease and teen pregnancy and negative emotional consequences, and the list goes on and on. We also provide information about contraception, but not the same way that that abstinence curricula from Planned Parenthood does. We think it's very important for teens to know that even if they use a condom or contraception, that doesn't make sex safe. It doesn't mean they won't get pregnant. It doesn't mean they won't have an STD. It doesn't mean they won't have any kind of emotional consequences. We think that young people need to know information that is going to help them make the best decision, and that best decision is to wait. So our programs really prioritize the kind of skills that are going to help empower young people to avoid all the risks. Someone mentioned the anti-smoking campaign earlier today, but I like to point to that because do you know that just a generation or so ago, smoking was a very accepted and expected behavior, wasn't it? It was kind of how you proved that you were an adult. all the movie stars and all the movies showed somebody smoking, and you know, all of the macho guys were smoking, and even the sultry women were smoking. But fast forward to today, and it's quite a different story, isn't it? And you know, the difference is there was a cultural shift that all of a sudden, in many different venues, the message was communicated that smoking wasn't good for you. And that if you did smoke, it'd be a good idea if you quit. And if you didn't smoke, it would be a very good idea if you never started. And now there's a cultural expectation to that effect, isn't there? And what did we see in the smoking rates? They have plummeted. Well, a lot of people say that abstinence education or abstinence until marriage is an unrealistic goal. Do you know that about the same percentage of people were smoking just before they started that anti-smoking campaign as teens who are sexually active now? Is it really unrealistic, or is it only unrealistic because we are unwilling as a culture and as a people to set those same standards for something that I would argue is at least as important as an anti-smoking campaign? Well, we already talked about this, so I won't spend a lot of time on this, but abstinence education, you know, a lot of times when we think of sex education, we only think of it in terms of the physical consequences. And we kind of opened up by saying that abstinence education is a great way to get to the end of abortion in this lifetime, but it really goes a lot further and much further beyond that. Let me share with you some research. 58% of teens suffer emotional fallout if they add sex to their relationships. That's a stunning percentage. Girls are 3 times more likely to say they felt used, and they are also 2 times more likely to attempt or consider suicide. 60% of boys express regret. 77% of girls wish they had waited. Casual sex isn't without consequences, is it? There are serious emotional consequences. Do we ever talk about that? Rarely. And yet, the emotional consequences are being seen in sociological research in growing numbers, but yet we aren't connecting the dots between teen sexual activity and these emotional consequences. Okay, here's another great example of why abstinence education is really great, and this is new research that was really exciting for me too. It protects against marital distress. Who would have thought? Think about it. We like to think of abstinence education or abstinence as one side of the same coin as fidelity within marriage. Because the same character qualities that are necessary to remain abstinent, things like self-control or self-regulation, respect for others, delayed gratification, commitment, those are the same things that are necessary for marital stability, aren't they? And so we really weren't surprised at all that we found that research showed that teen sex results in twice the risk of divorce later in life. This is about a lot more than just pregnancy and STDs. 32% of girls who had sex as teens divorced within 5 years, 47% divorced within 10 years. By contrast, those who didn't have sex as teens divorced 15% within 5 years and 27% within 10 years. We think of abstinence education as really important for healthy family formation, and this research really shows that that's the case. So yes, it also avoids teen pregnancy. Notice I put it last. Because I really think that those other things are so important and we forget about them. Let's look at preventing teen pregnancy. It's certainly the most reliable solution to the abortion problem. Did you know that children who are born within marriage have much more stability in their home? They're much more likely to avoid poverty, educational attainment. They're more likely to graduate from high school. They're more likely to go on to college. They're more likely to be successful and happy in their career. They're less likely to be idle, is how one research study showed it. They're not going to be the ones in the unemployment line for 5 years. They're more likely to have better jobs, better marriages, as we just said, less divorce, as we just mentioned, and less incarceration. Do you know, if you look at young men in particular who are incarcerated, by and large, the vast majority of them never had a dad in the home. So are you beginning to see how this single issue really impacts a variety of social ills that we all care about, and it goes far beyond teen pregnancy? Oh, and they have better health, too. It also prevents STDs. Did you know that 1 in 4 teen girls have at least one sexually transmitted disease? 1 in 4. Among African American girls, it's 1 in 2. This was a CDC study, and let me tell you just a little about that that makes this even more concerning, I think. The 4 STDs that they studied, 2 of those 4 are still transmissible even with the use of a condom. So the safe sex lobby that say, go ahead and have sex, but make sure you use a condom, are really lying to our young people. And they're really providing information that is putting that teen at great risk. I was just talking to someone from a state where sex education is mostly safe sex. And a trainer told the health providers that they were not to tell the teens that condoms don't provide 100% effectiveness, even though it's inaccurate to say that. Why weren't they supposed to talk about any of the risks? Because they were afraid if they really told teens that condoms weren't fully effective, that they wouldn't use them. And then they'd be at even greater risk. And yet these same people say that abstinence education harms young people. Go figure. If you look at the rate of STDs across the country, young adults, 15 to 24-year-olds, bear the brunt of the majority of all sexually transmitted disease. In fact, when you look at those figures, 50% of all sexually transmitted disease are among 15 to 25-year-olds, and yet that's only 25% of our population. Many STDs also increase the possibility of someone acquiring HIV twice, some even sevenfold. So this is very, very serious. And risk begets risk. Listen to this from another study. Sexually experienced teens are almost 4 times more likely to engage in oral sex, 20 times more likely to engage in anal sex than their peers, which puts them at risk for STDs and HIV. So delaying sex obviously is key, not just merely reducing risk by condom use. I'm sharing this information with you because oftentimes abstinence education is characterized as an agenda of religious zealots who are merely using this as an excuse to try to promote their agendas or to proselytize in the public setting. And I think it's very important that even though you may hold this value dearly because of your religious convictions, that you are able to communicate it in the public square in a way that makes anything other than abstinence education clearly second best at best. So under the Bush administration, HHS contracted with an organization to look at all of the studies about condom effectiveness. And I know you can't see this, but again, I'm putting it up here just so that if you want the information, you know where to get it, and you know that I'm not making it up. It shows here that condom use actually increases the risk of acquiring certain STDs if anything goes wrong in the process. So safe sex is a misnomer. One thing that you received that NAEA puts out, and if you didn't receive it, it's available at the registration desk. It's called Correcting Misinformation in the Sex Education Debate. Many of the things that we are sharing today are summarized in here. And so this can kind of be your cheat sheet if you ever need to defend abstinence education. NAEA is the primary media voice for abstinence education. And so I've had the pleasure of debating, for example, the president of Planned Parenthood. And it was an NPR radio interview debate. And I really thought that she would be a lot more creative than she was, but she was not creative at all. If you had the correcting misinformation, you could have won the debate too. It was that predictable. So we want to make that available for you. So here are a couple of other misperceptions. We already talked about the just say no message, so I'm not going to talk about that anymore. How many of you have heard that abstinence education doesn't work? Well, come on, be honest. That's more like it. If like 90% didn't raise their hand, I would think either you've fallen asleep or you haven't been reading the media. That's probably the number one criticism for abstinence education. So NAEA every year puts out abstinence works. These are available out at the book table. There are 22 different studies here showing that that students who are a part of successful abstinence programs are about twice as likely to delay sex. And young people who are sexually active coming into an abstinence class are more likely to discontinue that sexual activity. In fact, one of the programs in here, Operation Keepsake, is right here in Cleveland, Ohio. And they had stunning results showing that among those who were sexually active, their value of abstinence and waiting increased tremendously. If you ever have to argue the benefits of abstinence education, it is worth having this to take with you. I guarantee it. We have won state legislative battles just through the use of this book, putting an end to that argument that abstinence education doesn't work. It is here at the book table. Yes. I want to share just a little story about why saying abstinence education is ineffective is really just a straw man. Back in 2008, Representative Waxman from California, I don't know if you're familiar with him. My thoughts exactly. Held a hearing on the effectiveness of abstinence education. Now you need to know that he is a historic opponent of abstinence education. He's a historic opponent of just about everything we hold dear, let's face it. So he held this hearing under the guise of really exploring to see if there's really any kind of research showing that abstinence education is effective. He brought in six experts from across the country, from organizations that you are very familiar with Ivy League universities that you are very aware of, and asked each of his witnesses, oh, and by the way, he had six witnesses and we were able to provide one. So one very astute member of Congress asked this panel of experts who were there after all because they wanted to know, they wanted to get to the bottom of it. Does abstinence education work? So Representative Virginia Fox asked the question, if abstinence education was shown to be as effective as contraceptive education or more effective, would you support voluntary use of this method, i.e. abstinence education? Witness number one, no, I would not. Witness number two, if it was effective, no. Number three, no. Number four, no. Number five, no. Number six, you want to guess? No. Number seven was ours, and he said yes. Does that tell you something? Is this really about the research? No, it's not. But lest there are some who really care about the research, yeah, we've got it. And those who really care about young people and really just want to implement something that works, this wins the day. So let's look at the research, supposedly for comprehensive or contraceptive sex education. Not a single school-based program has demonstrated a reduction in STD rates. Wow, 1 minute? Okay, if you want to know other research about contraceptive sex education, let's talk afterwards. It's just not there. I'm going to just go real quickly through this. Our opponents say abstinence education is harmful. I want to show you one more example. Remember, on the left-hand side is a curricula that your taxpayer dollars are paying for. On the right-hand side is an abstinence curricula. On the left-hand side, they put condom use and abstinence on equal playing field as equally protective. Your taxpayer dollars at work. On the right-hand side, it explains how we talk about contraception. And the title says, what about safe sex? And so we talk about that. There really is no such thing as safe sex. The only way to remain totally free of any kind of concerns is to remain abstinent. Well, here's another one, talking about how to make condoms fun and pleasurable. Yet another curricula implemented with your taxpayer dollars. We already talked about unrealistic, and we're almost out of time. I just want to share something that connects this to the pro-life issue. At the beginning of the Obama administration, I was privileged enough to be a part of a small group who were invited to the White House. And the purpose of our coming to the White House was to talk about reducing the need for abortion and sex education. During the course of this meeting at the White House, his top advisors linked the two. And they said, you know, we could reduce the need for abortion if everyone had access to contraception regardless of their age. And that's really not even the worst of it. Without parental consent, of course. But they were saying during the course of this meeting that the abortion issue really isn't an issue about the value or sanctity of life. It's the problem of the pregnancy. The whole issue of abortion isn't about helping young people develop character qualities so that they will avoid this. It's about minimizing or mitigating the results of risky behavior by making sure they have a condom or contraception. I'll say I was in the minority in that group. But another brave soul across the table from me piped up and told the top member of the staff, you know, I think I know what we could do to come to an agreement and to an understanding if the president really wants to reduce the number of abortions. But before he could share his good idea, the top advisor stopped him very abruptly and said, the president never said he wanted to reduce the number of abortions. What he said was he wanted to reduce the need for abortion. Now that's, you might say, that's semantics. What is the difference? Well, what is the difference? Reducing the need for abortion is assuming that there is a need, right? So it is setting as an objective presupposition the validity of abortion. The very 3 days later, I believe, after this meeting, the president spoke at Notre Dame. Do you remember that? And because a USA Today reporter knew that I had been at the White House, she called me and wanted my commentary on the president going to Notre Dame. And she said, you must be encouraged that he wants to reduce abortion. And he wants to reduce the number of abortions. And I said, are you sure that's what he said? She said, well, I don't know. I said, you might want to read the transcript. And so she hung up, read the transcript, and called me back and said, you know, I didn't pick up on that, but you're exactly right. Now, it sounds so similar, and we might think, oh, goodness, aren't you just splitting hairs here? It's key, though, because President Obama zeroed out all funds for abstinence education and introduced this new program implementing curricula that I've been showing you this afternoon for contraception and contraceptive programs. And now, here we are, almost at the end of his first term. And that conversation that we had in the White House at the beginning of his term is now a major campaign issue. This is no small issue. And it's so important that you be equipped and that you understand this issue so that you can advocate that your taxpayer dollars not be used for something that it is harmful, genuinely harmful to young people. I invite you to get involved here at the local level, at the state level, and join with us at the federal level as well. I know we're at the end of time. I will end. I will tell you that I have some paper up here if you are interested in receiving updates, learning how to become engaged. Please put your name and email address, and we will make sure that you partner on behalf of our young people. Thanks.
A few questions. I forgot to announce that the questions need to go on cards again, so if you have a question, you might want to get one in, because right now I only have two questions, and I think we have a little bit more time, okay. Especially because one question is a one word, glee. I guess they want you to comment on it.
That could be an exhibit A in the sexualized media, certainly.
Well, could you elaborate on that then? What are parents to do? They say on the other side, just turn it off. What would you suggest?
Well, that's a good question. You know, a lot of times as parents, we think that our teens aren't listening to us at all. But every single survey, without exception, that asks teens, where do you want to learn information about relationships, about sex, about setting boundaries, about dating, all of these really, really important issues, overwhelmingly, guess who they say they want to hear from? Mom and dad. Mom or dad. It's not the peers. Yeah, they're on the list, but they're much further down. But a lot of times we feel a lack of empowerment either because maybe we're not too proud of some things we did when we were young, or because we don't know how to broach the conversation. And I think, you know, the whole TV thing goes into that as well. But I think on a broader issue, I think that parents really need to be empowered by knowing every single one of us, without exception, made mistakes and have done things in our lives that we're not especially proud of. But have we learned from those? That's called maturity. Don't we want our children to learn through our mistakes rather than by repeating them? You know, I think that it's the same with setting any kind of guidelines and boundaries. If we are silent, that says a lot too.
Okay, and for those that don't know, Glee, welcome. Very much welcome. That means you don't watch TV. I didn't know what it was either. And still don't know what's in it, but I've heard of it at least because my daughter told me the word. All right, can the morals and values factors and other similar facts as mentioned in human... Okay, let me read this for me and let me get my glasses. Okay, they're going to follow
Star,
me.
Star, I need your glasses too.
You
can the morals and values factor and other similar facts as mentioned...
Humanae vitae. Yes, okay.
They're going to teach you Catholic language before you leave if you're not already familiar. And a song, a Christmas song. Okay. And last, as the historical fact, if not better reason, be part of the supporting factors in abstinence education.
So when Vitae said what they're already teaching in the Catholic Church, is this not an important factor?
Oh, absolutely. It's very important. And we believe strongly at NAEA that parents should be the primary educators and certainly the primary sex educators of their children. We believe that sex education, whether it's in the school, in the community at large, in this church setting, needs to reinforce the values of parents. It also has to be in the best health interest of young people. And I know that among this group, those things are the same.
This is a really interesting question. With all we've seen in the availability of contraceptives to our teens and young people, and especially in light of the conversation we're having as a nation now on contraceptives, are there plans to provide or force sterilization? Because that's also part of this discussion that hasn't made the national news. Is there a plan to force sterilization on our young people?
Well, not that I know of. But I will tell you that one of the curricula that your taxpayer... I know I have been repeating that, but that your taxpayer dollars are paying for. The only study that showed its effectiveness against teen pregnancy, guess why it was effective? Because it mandated the Depo-Provera shot. So it hasn't gotten to that point, but...
Well, it is interesting that it's part of this discussion, contraceptives, more than after, sterilization, to encourage these young people and convince them that you don't want to bear children anyway, and this is a 100% sure. With my glasses, reading this one is difficult, so please write more legibly if you can. What do you think of the T-shirt that has an image of the blessed and I'm supposing it's mother, and infant Jesus that rends abstinence 99.9% effective? I'm supposing this is what the question is saying.
Oh.
I don't know. Who wrote this question? Am I saying it right? All right. Oh, ooh, I'm sorry that I'm talking about your writing. Don't tell the bishop. But am I getting it right that you have an expression on a T-shirt, mother and child?
I've not seen that. I've not seen that.
I want to talk to you about that. That doesn't sound like I would like that. No. Is this mockery?
That's what I was, yeah.
You know, we have got to be as wise as our enemies. I tell you, I had mentioned to you earlier why I'm developing this appreciation for the liturgy and the Catholic symbols. When I went to a protest years and years ago at USC, I saw a little sign, and it didn't stay with me. When I heard the liturgy for the first time, I was reminded of that little sign at a homosexual protest. We were protesting against them, and a little sign that said, "Made, not begotten." And it wasn't until years later when I heard the liturgy that says, "Begotten, not made." This is horrible. What? Where is this? A billboard? And a T-shirt? Well, I have things to say about that, but we'll look into it and make sure that we understand that this is unacceptable. God provides within us the ability, especially women, that if they want to not birth at that time, He has built birth control in women. And this is what we need to teach our children and our young people again in their schools. Okay, Mike says, end it. We are out of time. So I want to thank you again. Let's thank Valerie. Please get information about what they're doing in our schools. Because everywhere we can send these messages, I'm one that just believes we should pull them out. Let money follow children to the school of the parents' choice, and I think that those schools should be where men wear collars and have sticks in their hands. But in the meantime, until we get it to that point, we want to thank you for the work that you are doing in these public institutions that they call schools.
You have been listening to Valerie Huber, the Executive Director of the National Abstinence Education Association, the NAEA, a Washington, D.C.-based professional association that supports abstinence education as the optimal strategy for teen sexual health. Valerie spoke at our 2012 Bringing America Back to Life Symposium. For more information about the NAEA, please visit their website at www.abstinenceassociation.org.
If you are encouraged and edified by what you hear, please accept our invitation to become an active and informed member of the pro-life movement. There are many opportunities to serve. Visit our website at www.clevelandrighttolife.org. Or contact us at 216-661-3000, extension 11, or at lifenews@clevelandrighttolife.org. And please consider sharing this audio file with someone.